This episode of Simulation Nation is brought to you by Avkin Incorporated, your one-stop shop for everything wearable simulator and standardized patient.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of Simulation Nation. We are going to be having an interview with the Lance Bailey from Healthy Simulation to discuss some of the overall trends that we're seeing in global simulation, just kind of as a whole in the industry. So Amy, you were the one to really have that conversation with him.
Yeah. Like interviewing simulation royalty, actually.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I'm very honored. I, you know, normally he's kind of interviewing or webinars.
Yeah.
Having him in the, you know, with a shoe on the other foot, he did a great job.
So yeah.
Amazing content. And again, the man in the know when it comes to things as far as global and just having that far reach.
So, yeah.
Really enjoyed meeting with him and talking with him and being the one that was interviewing him versus the opposite.
I'm sure that was kind of weird because I'm sure he is way more used to being the person that's asking the questions versus.
But handling it with grace. I mean, again,
of course,
amazing.
Yeah.
So,
in terms of who I would define as a simulation influencer, I would put Lance Bailey as probably the simulation influencer in terms of the fact that he is the one that does a lot of the connections. He does a lot of taking kind of the trends and stuff like that. I do find it funny that if you are talking about like a conference or something like that, people will come up and ask to take pictures with him and things along those lines.
Yes.
It does definitely feel kind of like that celebrity influencer type of thing. Everyone knows who Lance is and, you know, he may not know them, but they know him kind of thing.
But he's such a genuine person.
Yeah.
And again, had a lot to say, really good insights. So I look forward to everybody really listening in and hearing more about the influences of simulation on a global scale.
Yeah.
And I think he's really the person to be able to help with that because, again, he does see things from such a different angle than someone who's working, you know, necessarily in a sim lab or working for an association or something like that. He does have such a different perspective in terms of being able to see things from such a higher level. Again, we've known Lance for, I think back in 2017 was when I first was introduced to Lance, but he was a huge advocate of Avkin back in the day, even before we were Avkin, you know, of just kind of really supporting this and moving this forward with his time at SimGhosts. And, you know, he has a background in film and things along those lines. And that kind of really led him into this unique situation of kind of where he was positioned inside of simulation, but then has gone forward to start Healthy Simulation, which if you don't know, it is the place to go in terms of articles, webinars, courses, to really understand and learn more about simulation as a whole. So it is for people who are new to simulation, but anyone who is seasoned or super involved in the industry will tell you that that is where they go to get new and current information on what's happening. So you'll find articles on there about, you know, anything from industry, from, you know, the newest technologies that's being released to evaluation tools with Kim Leighton. I know recently there was a partnership where Kim needed to move her evaluation tools somewhere, and Healthy Sim was more than happy to jump in and help out there of being able to host all of that information on their site. So you can go on there and get all evaluation tools for simulation as a whole. And all of the validated ones.
All of the validated.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I shouldn't say all, because there's other ones that are out there that are validated, but a compository of different evaluation tools. And I was shocked. I recently went and checked it out. It's been a little while since I looked. And there was just some really cool tools that I didn't know that it had. So even if you've been to Kim's website in the past, go back and take a refresher because, again, so many really, well, it's actually to Healthy Sim's website now. But to go back there and take a refresher because there may be something there that you didn't realize that was available free to use in mass quantities. I confirmed with Kim that you can use it for as large of an audience as you want. And they really encourage people to use the same tools because that's really going to get us some grounded research and knowledge about how to move simulation forward in a meaningful way.
And there's so many resources on there just in terms of, I think, a lot of times we don't realize how much other people have already done. And I think we're going to get into a lot more of that later on into Simulation Nation with some of our future episodes that I'm really excited about, because there are just so many things happening in terms of here's resources, here's ways for you to be able to just use this or modify this
for what you need it to be. But I think a lot of times we feel like we have to create the wheel because we don't have it or our center doesn't have it. But really going on to Healthy Sim helps with just being able to kind of get a kickstart. And they have a search bar. So again, if you're looking for something specific, makes it a lot easier to search what you're looking for. And then again, they have a lot of webinars and courses on there, some for CE, some not. But again, they're all really helpful in terms of having some of the big players, again, the big names in SIM, and being able to hear from them directly. So,
well, and Teresa Gore is one of his authors, which is just, that's been probably within the last year and a half. And that's amazing to have her as a part of the team, because she's, again, a big influencer in simulation as well. So having her really, you know, be there to support the development and the proliferation of this content is amazing.
Yeah. And again, just being able to hear from Lance and his perspective in terms of where things are going globally, his background and all of that, I think is really exciting to hear. So we're going to dive into that interview.
Lance, thanks so much for joining us today. We're going to be talking about a simulationist guide for the global simulation industry. And really, we're just trying to kind of understand what's happening in the simulation world globally. We know you are the man in the know, but want to hear, before we get started into that, just a little bit about your background. Like, what got you into simulation? What caused you to, you know, really develop a passion for this? Because it is definitely, I feel like it's a, you get a simulation fever and it never goes away. So just tell us a little bit about how you got started.
Yeah, it definitely is a passion. And I think it's a passion because it brought so many of my worlds together in such a wonderful way that it just like clicked. And so my background was an AV nerd in high school, definitely spent huge number of hours making lightsaber videos in high school and all kinds of like, and this was like 2021 technology. So we had to hand paint each frame. Like, you know, I did that work. And so I went to film school at UC Santa Cruz. I came back down to LA and worked in Hollywood for about 4 years, doing everything from small production where I was moving, you know, camera equipment around or helping be, you know, editing or other small projects. And then I got to work for Playtone Productions and Mr. Tom Hanks and his production company. And so I got to see big budget film and how all those things kind of came together with hundreds of people on sets with all these moving pieces. And then I did feel like I was getting a little tired of the red carpet kind of life. And I didn't feel like I was helping people. And so I went back to school. I became an EMT and a firefighter. My mother was a director of a nursing program at El Camino College in Torrance, where I went through my fire academy. And my dad was a physician. He was actually one of the first doctors to go through occupational medicine training at NASA, which is why I was born in Houston. And so there was a long history there of healthcare, of aviation. I learned actually how to fly with my dad in gaming simulators before I knew how to drive. And so, you know, that concept of like, you can learn something on a computer was very innate in my family. And so when my mom brought me into her nursing program, she said, come take a look at this new technology. And it was a Laerdal Simman Classic now. And it was like an aura was around this thing. And I was like, oh, like, so, you know, it had cameras and video technology for recording. It had experiential learning. It had real time kind of clinical training applications, and it had technology. And so it was all these wonderful things where I could all of a sudden utilize this theater, film knowledge and background of creating experiences that I'd learned and so much appreciated, but now applied in a way that could really actually help people. And so I quickly became a sim tech for the LA Community College District. Then I became the director of the Clinical Simulation Center of Las Vegas, which was a partnership between UNLV and Nevada State College and their schools of nursing and their advanced degree programs. And then as well as the University of Nevada School of Medicine out of Reno. And they send their third or fourth year students down in their residency program. So I've got an opportunity to really see the need to develop a program, hire people, bring groups together for policy and procedures and process and training of faculty and finding staff and doing business development and revenue generation. And then basically, you know, seeing the opportunity to help other organizations do the type of work that we were doing there. And so that's why I created SimGhost, the nonprofit organization, in 2010. And then as well, healthysimulation.com. And then I took off to in 2012 to start running those projects full time. And I've been full time on Healthy Sim since about 2017, when we felt like comfortable letting me let go of the ropes of and the reins of SimGhost and providing an opportunity for the community to support that initiative more. And so, long-winded answer for you there, I know, but in summary, it was, you know, film and digital media, it was EMS, it was digital-based technologies, experiential learning, and then a passion, you know, for just online and digital marketing and publications, help others to kind of really understand like what can be successful here, because I felt like the answers were all within the community and we just needed to find ways to bring that community together so that it could share and network and learn from one another.
I have to say that from my perspective, I was around in simulation before Healthy Sim and have watched Healthy Sim grow. And to me, I think it was very visionary for you to anticipate or see, hey, we just need to get all of this into one space and have access to it. But nowhere in your background did I hear you say anything about digital marketing. So how did you learn about that?
Yeah. Yeah. So a lot of that came from film and digital media, of understanding the importance of all the elements that go in front of the screen or the mise-en-scene, which is the first thing that I learned about film school. And so how much time and effort goes into creating a production that then turns around and either moves the audience emotionally or moves the audience to make a purchase or to like and subscribe, whatever it was. And so there was that element of how do we convey a message that from the thought of an idea and a script to an outcome that was meaningful for the investment in the production itself. And so I think there was a lot of that kind of marketability understanding of digital media productions and how we get to that. And then applying the online learning was specific to trial and error over the last 13, 14 years now, almost, that we've been doing this, where we kind of see what's working for people and then take that and incorporate that into new and bigger and better versions of the website. And so, you know, my design skills are all right, but, you know, expanding to be able to bring in more team members to be able to better represent what we do with the media content that we produce, having that kind of base understanding from my film and digital media background, I think is instrumental in kind of helping understand why I've been able to tell stories in a way that helps people quickly take advantage of the tools that we're creating. And that's primarily one of the goals for us, is to be effective and efficient, because we know how busy our audience is with regards to, you know, the number of letters that they have after the name is more than usually they have in their name. And so there's a lot of credentialing and training and process. And then, of course, clinical demands and educational demands on everyone's time. So I just wanted to be really effective. And I think my background in documentary filmmaking also helped me there, because you need to understand what the audience, from the audience's perspective, what they can relate to and how to get to that place where they can. So I think a lot of it came from there as well.
Yeah, I would say that my experiences as a nurse, you know, you learn to be empathetic and you learn to kind of try to put yourselves in other people's shoes to be able to have that empathy. And so, you know, one of that is definitely for me, one of my sources of pride with being the CEO of Avkin is that I feel as though I am one of the simulationists, right? I understand, you know, my sales team might say, you know, I've tried to call them or tried to email them a couple of times and they haven't gotten back to them. Like, it's the middle of the semester. It is the middle of the semester. You are going to have to wait until there's a bit of a break, until they have a chance to breathe. And I can remember one time they said, well, we don't want to send anything out on a Friday because nobody's going to read it. And I said, oh no. You catch up on the weekends. So it's okay if you want to send an email out on a Friday.
Yeah.
Most of the simulationists in this world, it is a burning passion and we spend a lot of time on it. Not everybody, and I completely respect boundaries, but it is one of those things that we are, you know, we're very, very busy people, and understanding that really does help you relate in a way that I think somebody that doesn't have experience in healthcare and doesn't have experience with simulation would really not be able to understand.
Yeah, because there's just so much on their plates. And I would say, hey, listen, if you're excited about what we've been able to produce so far, stay tuned. We're knee deep in a complete website redevelopment that we hope to launch sometime during summer of this year, 2024. And so we are taking all the feedback that we've gathered and knowledge and experience that we have gathered over the last 14 years and putting that all into a completely new website. So
that's
really excited about the engagement opportunities and the new functionality that we're going to be providing there. So stay tuned. We hope to be once again revolutionizing the healthcare simulation online space with regards to the tools and the technologies that we're going to launch there to help support the community in new ways. So I don't know what it's all going to look like yet, because we're just trying to figure it all out. It's massive rebuilding.
It's a lot of work,
as I know you are aware of. So,
yes,
you know, excited for that to be taking place here soon.
Yeah. So I want to give you a couple of congratulations because I want to make sure I don't forget to do this. One, today I got an email from the Women in Leadership Conference that is a collaborative between multiple different simulation groups. And typically in the past, it was initially just SSH that ran it. And then it was SSH and Axel, and I think Aspia joined. Mm-hmm. But now I see SimGhost is on another association that is building their simulation, women in leadership simulation experiences. And so I was really excited to see that. I was excited for you because I know that, that was your kind of your first step into getting beyond the influence of just a sim center, but stepping out into something that was bigger than yourself for sure.
Right. And we need to recognize just how much support women in leadership in the clinical simulation have moved this industry forward in this era. And so SimGhost right now, Jacqueline McBride has been an admin there for the organization for several years and, helping to kind of steer that ship. And now Erica Hinojosa is our president of the nonprofit organization. And so she's in the leadership role leading the board. And I love to see that. For me, one thing that I didn't share is actually both my parents are immigrants. I'm a first generation American. And so I've had the opportunity to travel overseas so much in my youth, and it was so important to me that we created a nonprofit organization and a website through healthysimulation.com that acknowledged that the United States is not the, and medical schools are not the only place where simulation is taking place and happening, right? And there's these world community nursing programs that need this help. And globally, there are so many, countries that are so excited about the power and the potential of simulation, but they just don't have access to those resources. And I wanted to create something that would reflect, my concept of a citizen of the world, right? And that means that everyone has a place here, and there's so much that we can do to promote those types of things in so many different domains and disciplines, DEI, inclusivity, training through simulation, these opportunities. It's because if you think the medium is the message, then simulation is a medium that provides an opportunity for the message of inclusivity and understanding better about patient demographics and interacting with those groups that might be foreign to the space that you are in kind of your world, your geographic location or your community. So, all of that is also very deeply important to me. And so I appreciate that recognition because it's so great to see that we've created a space for those things to happen, right? And that's really important. I love that.
Yeah. And the second big congratulations is that as of, I think it was IMSH, I'm not 100% sure you would know, but you guys took on the evaluation tools. So Kim Leighton had a separate website, and she's now passed that to you to really be the keeper of a very precious, precious resource for us in simulation. And I don't know Kim's motivation other than it's completely accessible. You're going to take good care of it, and she trusts you to take good care of it. But congratulations on that. Our sales team, I went through that, the evaluation tools with them and found tools that I didn't know that were on there. So that score evaluation tool, I was like, what? Where has this been all my life, right? So it is amazing stuff. Take time to look through that on healthysim.com. Just type in healthysim.com's evaluation tools. I've probably done it about 10 times in the last couple of days.
Yeah.
But really good stuff there. And, when you're looking for validated tools, that's where you need to be going.
Right.
There's other ones out there, obviously, but it is a great resource or clearinghouse for you. And I think you should take that as a huge compliment that you have been deemed the keeper of those evaluation tools to disseminate them out beyond just the walls of wherever Kim was able to reach.
Yeah, I'm so honored, and I feel very blessed that Dr. Kim Leighton and the multiple authors, there are 20, 30 authors that have contributed to these different tools, right? And so she's worked on some of them and others. And so she really helped to organize this group and this content. Unfortunately, it was on a website and they were having issues with all of that. And so, of course, we've got experience in the website domain and the ability to help to promote and market these things globally. And so we're so thankful that we're being given this, provide this opportunity to host those things and really care for them. And I feel a little bit like Indiana Jones. It's like one of those key pieces of artifact that we're utilizing in such an important way. So, I do really take it very seriously. And we're already seeing trends in terms of utilization. So it's really fantastic to know. And I think one of the things that I think is so important about that is that Dr. Layden and the team wanted to keep their tools open access. So they're not in journals because they didn't want to have to provide permission for singular use every single time somebody wanted them, or then to have people to have to pay for any particular journal to get access to these tools. That's why they've been kept, you know, outside of the journals, but they're peer reviewed and they certainly have research behind them to ensure that they are meaningful. And I think just a very excited for us to be able to host and promote those. So stay tuned there. We're going to be doing basically an article a month, and we're going to start to hope to do a webinar a month about one of the tools over this next 2024 time period. So stay tuned from us, because you're going to get more in-depth knowledge from these authors of these various tools. So we better really kind of dive down deeper and better understand use applications and opportunities. So stay tuned for more of that content coming soon too.
That's excellent. Well, so getting back to the idea of, you know, being globally minded, you know, you are, I would say, very much in tune as far as anybody that I interact with. I think Kim's pretty globally minded, and Colette Falsey Doyle as well. But can you tell me a little bit about what you're seeing as far as trends in the simulation, you know, on a global level?
Yes. Yes. Well, so first, I think is the expansion of simulation post-COVID has been massive. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I would say that one of the major trends because and through that has been the expansion of digital-based learning technologies. So, for example, prior to COVID, one of our most requested or two most requested sales leads categories on our Find Vendor form were for mannequins and audio video systems. Like, those were just the top two. Post-COVID, right alongside right there is digital-based virtual patients or other digital-based technologies. And so certainly I think this band-aid of, hey, how can we use Zoom in our clinical educational practices has gone beyond just online video kind of engagement to utilization of these tools in a way that can improve clinical outcomes, standardize training content, and then provide for 24/7 access remote and distance base that is enabled for everyone. So I think we saw a lot of success with those tools being deployed, and even naysayers not having an opportunity to decline the opportunity to use these tools during COVID because there were no other options. And then lo and behold, oh, guess what? It works really, really well. And when the learners come in, now when they go to work on physical mannequins in the clinical simulation space, they've already had even more iterations of knowledge beforehand with either 360 camera capturing experiences and getting to put those on and see them on first, putting on VR headsets and engaging with clinical patients, or going through digital-based training applications and orientations through online media, right? So all of those things have built up to, I think, an expansion of both the physical simulation utilization in a more meaningful way and expanded that kind of learning opportunity through digital. The other thing that we're seeing, and we literally just wrapped a webinar about this 20 minutes ago with Dr. David Rogers from IU on AI. And I think that AI is just starting to hit our community and our industry. And so obviously it's brand new as a kind of real meaningful concept that's only existed in the last 2 years. But the implication for clinical simulation is going to be massive, because it does help to get you 90% of the way there. We just did a whole webinar on it, and there's still like hallucinations, and there's a need to fact check everything that's going on. It is very confident in its answers, even though it's completely lying to you about something. So there's still a need to really learn and understand how to utilize those tools. But just like AI is impacting every other industry globally, it's going to have massive implications. I think we're going to start to see AI as a buzzword in the vendor halls in the not too distant future for every company out there. And we're going to start to see more and more of that in the literature on top of those extended reality opportunities. And now imagine a world where those things become blended together, right? And so I think you just see a furtherance of the implications of digital technologies in the clinical education and simulation space. And of course, to me, that doesn't mean it's replacing. It means it's complementing the things that we're doing with physical simulation, because you still have the tactile feel, the touch, the team dynamics, right? Having gone through Fire Academy, you can imagine all day long a scenario on the whiteboard where we say engine two goes to the north side of the building and it attaches to the hydrant, and then it proceeds to the west side of the building. Lance, you're going to be firefighter first in on second floor. Okay, that's all fine and well and good. But now I'm wearing 80 pounds of gear. It's 100 degrees outside. There's a Vietnam War vet. yelling in my ear that I'm moving too slowly with regards to the end of that coupling up. I can see a fire and people are screaming at me. Can I perform with all of that in the team-based scenario in the physical reality? Still so, so important, and will become even more important as we start to understand more about medical errors, patient safety issues, and how those are coming to the forefront through groups like the National Patient Safety Board Advocacy Group, a media partner of HealthySeam, where they are working with legislative government to get a patient safety board agency created. All of those things are going to tend towards an understanding. Plus, the other big metric, and I know I'm going for it here, but another really key metric that I think is so important for us to think about and understand as an industry trend level is that in the United States specifically, almost 80% of the healthcare workforce is over the age of 40. And I think that has such huge ramifications. Not only is that population going to become patients more and more so in the next 20 years, but that mass exodus of professionals with all that knowledge is going right out the door. And so governments are going to start going, uh-oh, what are we going to do to fill this gap? And the tools that are going to be available to them in a contemporary age to reduce time to train and improve outcomes with better outcomes and more effective use of dollars? Simulation, right?
Yeah. So
there is a adoption curve acceleration hockey stick figure that is coming here in the next 10 to 15 years because of all of these different reasons: digital technologies, changing demographics of healthcare providers, increased need, reduced availability, AI, all this stuff is going to tend towards a really exciting time for the healthcare simulation space. I know that there's been people in this industry for 15 to 20 years who are like, well, they thought this was going to happen 10 to 15 years ago. And, you know, why is now, you know, the thing where we think that this is going to happen? And it's because I think COVID has accelerated 5 to 7 years in a lot of different ways. And we're going to see all those things starting to compound interest. And there's a clock. The clock is that, hey, if 80% in the U.S. is over the age of 40, you know, then in the next 10 to 15 years, that bubble is leaving. And who is going to fill that space? And there's not going to be any more debate about whether or not we should try simulations. It's going to be like, how quickly can we get that deployed? Because we need to fill these gaps.
Well, I think it's a big thing. I was at the Mayo Clinic sim conference. And just as you talked about with AR/VR, there was a guy there that was presenting. He got his PhD in AR/VR, and he talked about the use case, and he had a model up. And I thought it really spoke exactly to how I personally feel, because people come up as a CEO of a wearable simulation, hybrid simulation company, and they say, how do you feel about AR/VR? And I'm like, it is a fantastic preparatory tool, right? So getting them prepared to come into simulation, why not have them do a heart failure simulation with using AR/VR? Why not prepare them for what they're going to potentially see in the room, right? Mm-hmm. And then the other piece where he said, so like new learners, novices coming in and experiencing a simulation for the first time. The other piece is if you are an experienced, so think of like utilizing the Da Vinci tool in surgery, having your surgeon warm up on the Da Vinci tool using AR/VR.
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't we do something like that, right? You want your surgeon to be on their game and to be warming up with those things. So I think those like just-in-time training and also the preparatory work for novices and allowing them to kind of understand what's, you know, getting the pathophysiology and the, you know, their didactic content, putting all that together and having it stick is going to help them do better in simulation.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, they're going into the hospital to take care of people. So we can't walk around that. That has got to be a topic of how do we help them with their communication piece? Because the research or the literature says they're great at technology. And, you know, I was doing a interview with Crystal Farina, and she's like, they're great at texting. They just want to text their patients and text their care providers. And that's not how it works. They've got to learn the communication piece, right? So
right.
That's and I've also read literature about how people, young people or new grads are leaving the profession because they don't feel like they've been prepared for these really difficult conversations.
Yeah.
Simulation's the perfect place to do that, right? And let's have it there so that they do feel prepared, so we're not losing them.
Yeah, I think even put simulation before they even get into the nursing degree.
Yeah, excellent.
Put them through an experience where they, you know, it's kind of an orientation simulation where they can see perhaps some learners who are maybe more advanced going through some training opportunities, but then put them in some of those aid roles in those moments, you know, because I think there's such a need for kind of better showcasing a little bit about what some of those realities are and maybe some of these scenarios about health, other healthcare providers not being so nice and or talking down to you. And it's just like, hey, guess what? We're trying to show you what might actually happen for you and again, that hopes to be in an evolving world where those things are going to evolve out. But right now, the reality is that that some doctors are going to talk down to you no matter who and what you are, just based off of, you know, their own egotistical issues. And so, you know, I think, wait, there's so many more ways that we can use simulation to kind of, deal with orientation, finding the right student, professional identity development, training, and education, and then into the clinical practice. And what's going to be exciting to me is that long term, you know, there are going to be technologies that are like blockchain that are going to help to be able to provide for a data level research where you can attach, you know, an individual and see their training history, no matter where they go, because it's going to be part of a kind of a massive, in a sense, data set of that particular person from their first day of education through their clinical last final days until they retire. And so all of these different elements where patients, medications, you know, a vital sign history will match up and have, you know, location within a data set that can then be relevant towards everything happening in that hospital for that provider, everything happening at a global scale. So, you know, and yes, we do need to think about what do these big ramifications mean for our industry with regards to the ways that healthcare is going to evolve. I'll give you a good example. Aviation simulation. I talked to Captain Jack Drapier, who's a senior Airbus training consultant at the WATS Simulation Conference of the World Aviation Training Symposium. Fantastic. Put on by Andy Smith and the Haldale team, you know, and to be in an industry where they have bought into simulation for 50 years and see them like talking about how they can get a 0.00001 improvement on something because that's at the level that they're at was so exciting. But he said to me, you know, when he first became a pilot in the 50s and 60s, he was learning from guys that had flown in World War II. And their idea was just get in the plane and that's where you learn how to fly. That's how I did it. And so they weren't really comfortable with these simulation technologies. But by the time he was an educator, all those learners knew no other world than the one that they were going through. Uh-huh. These educators knew about the power and use of simulation. So that's another reason why this just starts to snowball and build and get to this kind of, you know, crazy place over time. But just to kind of finalize the thought there, I saw a statistic that said 38% of new graduate nurses quit the profession within 2 years. And that is ridiculous. That's ridiculous for those individuals that they've gone through that much training and they find it so egregious that they don't want to participate anymore. That's ridiculous for healthcare that we allow ourselves to eat our young in that kind of capacity, that degree. And it's also ridiculous for the education, the training, the orientation programs. It's just ridiculous all around, right? And so that's a number that should be 3.8%, not 38%. Those are huge costs. And so I think simulation has so much potential to kind of help to reduce those numbers over time. And that was one of the cool, exciting things that Dr. Carolyn Uhoff, Dean of UNLV School of Nursing, while I was there, she put together an orientation program with the hospitals that the new graduates were going into for their rotations, but then were like key institutions for hiring afterwards. And they built an extended hospital-based orientation simulation program that the learners themselves, after graduating UNLV, had to invest in. If they succeeded in the program and scored well, then they were reimbursed by the hospital who then offered them immediately a job with the specialized training towards those clinical institutions. There's ways to do this in a way that we can reduce costs, improve outcomes, because and then in a sense better train to ensure that everyone is more comfortable with getting into these roles and making them work at scale.
Yeah, and I would also say that the new graduates need to understand boundaries and setting the boundaries of themselves, right? Our patient populations aren't getting any easier to manage. I mean, they're sicker. They have more comorbidities, and giving them the ability to really advocate for themselves and go, you know, take the time to do some self-healing. I think it was in the National Patient Safety Committee meeting that somebody gave a statistic very similar to the one that you mentioned about nurses leaving the profession. And the concept behind that is not only are you losing that nurse to the hospital that they worked at, but you're losing 30 years of work within the industry. So you're really, you know, again, it's an embarrassing statistic. And I do think simulation solves a lot of the problems there. I mean, there's other issues, right? I mean, there's some that simulation is not going to solve, but there are ways to empower these new graduates with the knowledge, skills, and abilities to be successful. And I do think simulation is a big part of that. And you see hospitals adopting more and more simulation, especially into the nurse residency programs, to help prepare them. So there is a big trend in that. And it's not going to be coming as fast as what I think it came in academia. But I do think that you are going to see more federal support for hospital-based simulation as well, because they are recognizing that this is important.
Yeah.
And as far as the congressional appropriations, we at AFCN have seen a significant increase in congressional appropriations being funded into the nursing schools that have applied for it to utilize our wearable technology. But it is they're hearing it not just from the nursing schools or from basic statistics. They're hearing it from the hospitals. We don't have enough nurses. I think even the National Council Patient Safety Council, I'm not saying it right, but you know what I'm talking about. They said that the nurses that are leaving, that they are going on to other it's not like they're not leaving and going to another hospital.
No, they're done.
They're done. They're leaving the profession. They're becoming realtors or whatever it is. And it's a shame. It's really a shame. So I think we can do better. And I do think simulation will solve. I mean, it's not going to be 100% of it, but I do think we can get that statistic down to a reasonable number.
To me, it's just about I think once we start to understand that we need to speak the language of C-suite executives, for hospitals and medical programs or institutions beyond academia that are in the professional care space, they have specific set of goals or pain points. And our solution needs to address their pain point from their perspective, right? So how we speak about these things to them, how we promote them, how we, can showcase success stories, even if just in a pilot project, can really open the door for so many institutions to much more investment. Because all it takes is a little bit of a proof of concept in a way that is digestible and understandable by those that pull the strings, that they go, oh, wait a minute, we got 10 times better outcomes for 1/10 the cost. Let's do that at scale. What else could we possibly do, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've had these conversations with simulation champions all over the world. And every time an institution goes from we started with one mannequin and now we've got a 50,000 square foot facility, it was this process repeated, repeated, repeated. Show success in a way that is understandable to those that can help make those investments. And then it's a no-brainer. It's like an aha moment. And of course, they're going to take credit for it. And they're going to say that their idea was the next. Fine. It's amazing what you can get done when you don't take credit for it, right? You've heard that.
That's right.
Before.
You don't need it.
So that's how this gets to that place. Now, I think that's a bottom-up approach. And I do think that there's opportunities for a top-down approach. How do we put pressure on C-suite execs to pick up the phone and call the simulation team and be like, we want to do X, Y, Z, and right? There are ways that we can do that through, I think, brand awareness of healthcare simulation and as an industry as a whole. And so there's also, to me, an interest out there to create ways that nonprofit organizations, corporations, and passionate simulation champion professionals can come together and move the industry forward. And that is part of what, I think is also the goal for healthysimulation.com, which is to kind of start to address and create opportunities for those wider global industry conversations that I think will revolve around a lot about PR and about lobbying efforts, about government efforts, legislative efforts, right, in terms of helping to make government better aware of the pain and the opportunity of simulation to kind of improve those outcomes and also reduce that stress, because it's coming. And I'm sure they're getting an earful behind closed doors about how bad it is and how bad it's going to get. And so the more that we can kind of toot this horn, right, in an organized way with a clear message the better I think we'll be as an industry. So that's part of what we try to accomplish and do as well.
So are there any like hotspots that are really growing in simulation as far as on a global level?
Yeah, so I would say that one of the areas that I've seen kind of grow is these regional-based opportunities for groups to come together and connect, right? And so I know that AvCan puts on these summit events in partnership with kind of regional. And so that is an area where I've seen more of that kind of consistent regional-based development. So that's been really exciting to see because, you know, when my wife and I went to Texas for a year for her PhD internship at the North Texas VA, I got an opportunity to connect with the SPOT or the Simulation Professionals of Texas group. And it was so wonderful because every 3 months they would go to a different sim center and they would put on a regional event. And like 75 to like 80, 100 people sometimes came. Texas is a big state, so a lot of people could, you know, drive for the day and get there. But it just was a great way to learn from other sim centers, connect with peers, understand what they were doing, see some vendor presentations, have some, you know, time to network and learn from one another. And so we duplicated that out here. I came back and Bonnie from the VA here, she's been helping to organize those in Vegas. It's been so great because just a great way to kind of connect with peers in your area, because learning from one another, I think, is still one of the best ways that we can teach and understand simulation. So I see that as a really big trend. And then I see as another big trend, you know, the increased use of social media to share what's happening in spaces. And again, I think COVID is really very helpful and responsible for getting even more people bought into that concept of what's going on. But I do see that, you know, for example, we doubled in the number of followers on our LinkedIn company page in just the last year. So the trend, I think, also for sharing and engaging in social media has also been something that's been really exciting to see, because I think that the more that the global healthcare community can see that simulation is doing things and sharing about things and getting great outcomes, right, the more that that's going to entice others to kind of be like, well, maybe we should learn a little bit more about this. So I think that's really exciting. And then there has finally been a trend towards increased development of simulation-based program development, and I'm talking at more like a industrial global level for engaging with legislators and developing this kind of work. So I think that that is a trend that is going to continue. There is going to be so much need from our community to support any, you know, campaigning to legislative bodies to help them to understand locally, right? Just think about this. If every sim center that was doing something really powerful or special could get their state representative somehow to come through that space and understand what's happening there for that clinical institution, it's a great way to showcase. And it's also a great way to promote, right? So I think if we can take away from our time together here for folks, like think about ways that, you know, if you want to get this to the next level, how can you support both your region, you know, your area, your local community of simulation champions, but also those legislative individuals, right? So like even like mayors of cities or governors of states, right? Or representatives to state government or federal government, if you can find ways to showcase what's happening here, it can give them the aha moment that they needed to say, oh, we could create a statewide program that did this for more initiatives like this, right? So I think that's another really big trend that's going to be, we're going to be seeing more and more of as people start to understand that that is a really important piece of getting our industry to the next level, is involving and showcasing what's happening to both the general public and to government bodies.
Yeah. And I will say, I think even on a global level, inviting key political leaders is really good. At least in the US, and I don't want to speak to it globally because I've never lived even abroad, but the idea of a politician coming to your space, that is good PR for them, right? And so there's an active learning. They're not coming to sit in a class and listen to class. No. They're coming to experience something that they've never experienced before.
Yeah.
You're exposing them to this whole new way of, you know, problem-based learning or active learning. And so it really is very visual. And so they are able to really get on board quickly and helping. It helps them to understand. Having a few students, I was talking to, I think it was Crystal Farina today, who said that she has students on her advisory board. I'm like, that's amazing. That's such a great idea. But having a few students, maybe from an advisory board or an honors program, talk about how this has influenced them.
Yes.
If it's been translational to clinical in any way, you know, those kinds of things are going to really help get the word out.
Yeah.
And I think that we hide what we're doing under a bushel. One, because we don't think what we're doing is really cool or powerful. We're just doing our jobs. But there is so much amazing stuff going on and so much that's happening on a grassroots level that just invite them. You know, take Healthcare Simulation Week to invite them, or invite them just, you know, at any point in time. Inviting media, work with your marketing team at your institution and have them help you. What we're doing is so cool, and they're dying for this information. They would love to be able to present on something like this. So don't think that you don't have something cool going on. You do.
Journalists run out of ideas for stories all the time. They need the content too, right? And so I think, just as you said, right, such a great opportunity to have a win for a legislator who's learning about something. And yeah, there's a photo up there, but you know, we're playing a game. Figure out how the game can benefit your program and create those opportunities to provide others with the benefit of the work that's being accomplished here, right? Again, the more that we can kind of give others that win themselves, the more that we don't have to take credit for all the things taking place there, the more that we're actually going to get accomplished. And I would just say, you know, there is this kind of media marketing thing that is its own skill set. I think that might be part of the reason why we don't also have as much promotion, is because it's just, you know, might be an assumption that if we build it, they will come. Well, yes, they will. But first, you got to toot the horn to get them know that, okay, we're going to open a house next week, or we're going to do this thing, right? So creating the program, the plan for that, just as much as we're creating the operational plan for how do we do the day-to-day of simulation and, you know, faculty development and scenario design, we also need to have on our docket and our agenda marketing and promotion. How can that be a part of the ongoing regular conversation? And it's not just a one and done, like, okay, well, we got local news, well, we did it. No, there has to be this ongoing process, right? And I think once programs understand that that's a time commitment that they can make through an administrative person who's overseeing the program, that's why directors and operational managers exist beyond just the day-to-day scheduling. It's these other things that help a program grow that I think need to be considered and thought of, you know, by those in the space. And yeah, that means we've got to get uncomfortable again, because we're going to have to learn some new skill sets, like how do we turn this camera on and put something together, right? But the one of the great things that you could do is work with if you're at a university, well, they've got they might have a journalistic department. They might have an audio video film production department. Like, reach out to those faculty, find partnership opportunities, right? Like, there's certainly, I think, ways to kind of lean into your institution to find other groups that could benefit from, you know, the work that needs to happen in your space and take it from there.
Yeah. And I know I didn't. And then when I got a theater partner and we were doing these really cool things with standardized patients, he's like, we need to get the word out about this, right? And so they were used to that marketing piece. So if it's not your skill set, it might be somebody within your within your sim center. Maybe, you know, your sim tech, like you, had experience with this, right? Who knows?
Right.
I talked to Elena Harrington, and she said, you know, she was talking about how they had movie sets that came in and rented their sim space and they used it for different things. I'm like, how did you find these places? She's like, I called them. Yeah. I just called them and told them that this is available. And it's like, oh, like, I would never have thought to reach out to, you know, different film industries. She had, you know, obviously hospitals and things along those lines she had partnerships with, but some really cool opportunities. And so you never know until you ask.
Right.
It's just, it can't hurt.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it may feel like clown shoes a little bit in the beginning, but you will very quickly be there. They're so excited about what we're doing that the story almost writes itself.
Yeah. One quick story there. You know, we got a phone call like that because we had put our Sim Center on the state, official state location website. So we did the paperwork to be listed on that state website. We got a phone call. There was a production out of LA. Something happened at the hospital they were supposed to shoot. It was an Errol Morris commercial for another nursing school, I will say, but who's a famous documentary filmmaker, is an Academy Award winner. So it was a big shoot but we made more money that day than we had ever made before. Yeah. And, you know, so get listed and think about those opportunities to kind of promote your space. Now, even there, you still want to maintain control. There was a movie production that wanted to come in. It was for a horror film. And we're like, no, we don't want to be associated with that, right? So even that requires a program and a forethought of policies of like insurance. Uh-huh. Who's going to, there's a lot of people and a lot of equipment and something could get damaged. So who's going to, you know, how, what's that insurance?
Right.
Right. But there's that kind of like, there's that stuff that you just get to kind of have those aha moments for, the more that you're engaged with kind of understanding about simulation operations and administration, that we try to create a lot of resources for on healthysimulation.com, both through our webinars and through our articles, and try to promote, because I think that there's so many like, oh yeah, that's a really good idea kind of, and that's why we wanted to build these things, right? It's like, everyone's got these great ideas, and like, let's create ways that we can share them and showcase them so that everyone can walk away with so much more.
Yeah. So when you think about from a global level, where is the use of simulation increasing? So if, you know, the only way that I would know that, again, you may know this without me explaining this, but the idea of how, where are you getting more members from, or where are more people taking some of your online courses, or where are you starting to see some trends as far as growth, you know, for, like, again, in countries that maybe haven't been doing it for as long or something along those lines?
Yeah, so certainly, you know, we do see industry trends in terms of, you know, countries that kind of increase in terms of participation on the website over time. And so I would say that the Middle East is an area where we do see kind of a continued growth pattern there for a lot of institutions that are supporting clinical simulation and getting really involved in it. China did kind of, I think, suffer a lot from COVID and a lot of craziness there. So we have seen a slightly diminished requirement there in terms of the number of users, but that is starting to increase again now. So that is, I think, kind of gotten over that hump and is changing through. Just the numbers overall, I think that's like the biggest thing is that we doubled in traffic in 2020. So we went from about 19,000 to 20,000 a month to over 40. It looks like we might be at our highest month ever that we've ever experienced. We're at about 47,000 people to the website just this month alone. So it doubled in 2020 to like probably like 40, and now we're seeing upward trends continue to like where we're looking at maybe 50,000 people a month to the website. So I would just say that it's really become bigger as a whole, and I think that that's the most important industry trend that I can leave the community with knowing at this point is that we are at the forefront of what is about to become a much bigger train. And so really exciting for everyone in the space to know that they're helping to lead that innovation and bring about this knowledge, but also that there's just going to be so many more people coming behind that need to get caught up, that need to better understand the opportunities, but that the industry is definitely growing. Absolutely, it is growing. And so that's what's exciting, I think, most of all, is because it means that we're just going to have more support in so many different domains, from research to operational kind of knowledge, and just the number of people that are going to be available for positions and new hiring, right? I think continues to grow. So that is the biggest trend we're seeing globally. It's just the number of people, no matter the location, increasing everywhere.
Yeah. And I will say, to go back to a thing that you talked about earlier, one of the big things for me that really attached me to simulation for my entire professional life is the fact that this community is a sharing community, and that nobody's hiding what they're doing or not sharing what's happening. We all know that we need to help make patients safer. And so we're willing to share that across institutions, across countries.
Yeah.
You know, I see all the time about people traveling to another country to help, you know, a new sim program get started. We're going to Doha. I'm actually leaving tonight in just a few hours to go to Doha to do a professional development training at a University of Doha Science and Technology. So, you know, again, because we are a sharing community, you know, you talked about the sim summits that we're out doing. We did grassroots workshops from the very beginning of this because we wanted to share what we, you know, getting things out. But it's not just about what we're doing at Avkin. That's how things started for me, is I was on the Anaxyl listserv, and I remember people saying, hey, I'm trying to do a psych mental health simulation on this. And somebody else would say, hey, here it is. You know, here's what we're doing. You know, and this is obviously before there was a lot of standards of best practice and things, and even a lot of available simulations to purchase, but we've just always been a caring community. And I was part of the 2015 National League for Nurses Simulation Leadership Group, and Marion Rizzolo was one of our mentors. And I remember saying to her, like, it's such a sharing community, and it makes me feel as though I want to be a part of it, because people, you know, it's like the paying it forward kind of idea, right? And she said, at some point that's going to stop. I really think that, you know, just like everything else, they think that's going to stop. And I haven't seen it stop yet. And yeah. I'm so happy that it hasn't, because I do think it has to do with this. We have new people coming in and we want to help them, because, again, we are all going to be consumers of healthcare in some form or fashion in our lives. And so it's not about what we're doing and keeping this hidden. It's about actually helping healthcare at a global level and making the necessary training and professional development opportunities so that our providers can provide the best care for the patients possible.
Yeah. I don't think it goes away. I just think it evolves into separate groups within the larger ecosystem. Because if we look at the technology adoption curve, you know, we're in an innovative early adopter stage. Those people are more comfortable taking risks. They're more comfortable with making mistakes and sharing about mistakes so that they can learn. And there's a passion and there's an excitement there. Well, again, as we increase into this mass adoption, we're going to have this early majority, late majority, which actually make up the bulk, right, of this kind of community that has yet to actually exist. They're out there. They just don't know yet that they're going to be bought into simulation somewhere in that zone, those two zones. That community is going to be less likely to be excited about sharing all the stuff that they're doing, maybe with the early majority, but the late majority are kind of like, we're doing this because we have to. And that is, you know, that is with any technology, right? So like some of your listeners here or watchers are not going to have any cryptocurrencies or Bitcoin or any of that, or haven't dabbled yet with AI, right? There's still this kind of, right? So we're all on different levels with different technologies in terms of where we are with adoption. So, but I do think even when you get to that early majority and that late majority, and not the bulk of individuals might be as excited and as passionate as the early adopters are, you're going to always have that sect of individuals that are kind of like on the forefront of the technology and are going to want to share and be passionate about learning and sharing for one another. It's just that we're going to gain a whole nother kind of group that is going to be a little less interested in kind of being at the forefront and taking as many risks, and are going to be more about like, they're going to listen in. They're going to be a much bigger audience, right? But that core group, I think, is never going to go away.
Yeah. And I would say that we're probably starting to dabble into that early majority. So one question, just I end all of my interviews with this question because I love to hear the responses. But I just want you to fill in the blank.
Okay.
So I knew I had crossed the threshold to I am a simulationist when?
Oh, it was immediate. When I saw that first mannequin, it was an aura around it. It was the cameras and the microphones and the mannequin and the computer technology and the experiential learning. And it was instant. So it was like my life finally had purpose. So it was like all these weird things that I'd been into all came brilliantly together. So that moment that happened, and it must have been 2008 as I was going through Fire Academy, and I went to my mom's nursing school there at El Camino in Torrance, and she said, come check this thing out. And it changed my life from that point forward.
That's amazing.
That was it. I was instant. I was hooked.
Great. Yeah. Great. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And, you know, I appreciate your knowledge at a global level, because I have some, because we do sell into other countries, but I certainly don't have all the knowledge that you do. So I really thank you for taking the time to share that with us today.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so appreciative of the work that you and the company are doing. And what's exciting about, you know, Avkin is it comes from the direct experience of doing simulation.
Yeah.
And so that's a really special element about Avkin, because you have lived this life and you've built tools to help others to make their lives easier. And so that's really special about Avkin. And again, then you've taken it even further to help with the type of work that we're doing here to showcase these stories and these ideas. So, you know, it's a very small circle of people that want to do this role as well on top of everything else. So, you know, I'm a big fan, Amy, of all the work that you all are doing out there. So, so appreciate you.
All right. So that was hearing from Lance, kind of on his perspective of, you know, how things are growing in simulation. So my biggest takeaway from the things he was saying that I think is just so exciting is to see how much simulation is growing. And I think that's the part that, you know, we're seeing different trends in different countries. You know, he mentioned China kind of falling back during the COVID time period, but then has mentioned a lot of other countries growing. Again, we can look at the UK, we can look at all these other countries that are continuing to grow. But I think that the exciting part is, rather than trying to dial into one area specifically, it's just kind of looking at a global scale and saying just simulation is increasing in terms of how much traffic is coming in, what people are searching, and what people want to know more about. And I think that's the really exciting part, is
the more that we are getting interest in the idea of simulation and healthcare simulation and what that's going to mean for, you know, the whole industry, it's also looking at standards and advocacy and us moving this forward to make sure that's happening. And I know you're also on the board too for,
I'm not on the board. I'm just a member of.
Oh, a member. Sorry.
Safety Coalition. Sorry.
No, I meant the everything with the sim ops position and the SP position as well.
Oh, that's just a special workforce.
A special workforce work group.
Yeah.
Through Society of Simulation Health.
Well, it's actually collaborative between ASPE,
okay,
and AXL and SSH.
Okay. So all the main associations then. But that is in an effort to also work through minimum wage standards when it comes to
Just job descriptions. It's with the Department of Labor, Federal Department of Labor in the U.S.
Yeah. But I think that, again, that's the other important piece here is even now getting advocacy for those positions as, you know, a serialized patient educator, as a, you know, SimOps position or, you know, whatever that may look like. I think that that's also another big factor here is that I think that's a huge leap for us and in the industry of being able to say, not only have we figured this out for simulationists, but now we're figuring it out for those positions that also help to support the simulation center as a whole. I think that's really exciting to see.
Yeah. And I think, I think as far as Lance, you know, are hearing the idea that it's really growing exponentially in multiple different countries, not just one particular area or one particular continent.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it rings true as far as what we're seeing at Avkin, where people are reaching out from multitudes of different countries that are wanting to purchase our products. But it's not just anyone, the area, the Gulf Coast region is the one that is growing mm-hmm. fastest. It's really, we're seeing this request really kind of broadly.
Yeah.
And even if you look at the literature, you know, the increase in articles that are being published by academics in Turkey or academics in Norway or wherever it is, that just speaks to the fact that it's not concentrated in any one particular area. But I was kind of surprised that there wasn't any specific trends that he was noticing. But I think that from a, you know, if we look at it really from the perspective of Avkin and what we see, that's a micro scale. He's got the more macro scale.
Yeah.
It does ring true and it makes sense for sure.
I think the cool thing too of looking at it from the Avkin perspective is that there are places too where they are growing quicker in terms of like adopting simulation. So let's say they haven't done it for a while. Like looking at Australia has had simulation for many, many years. You know, again, they're in a different place. But if you look at some of these countries that are emerging, I do think that there's an additional emphasis on multimodality perspectives, where I do think that similar to the US, that is something that's still getting adopted. Again, that's something that's still an uphill battle in terms of people saying, well, we use mannequins. We're really not looking to expand beyond that. We're starting to see that more and more of people starting to expand beyond what they're doing, right? They're starting to incorporate serious patients. They're starting to incorporate wearable simulators. They're starting to look at AR and VR and all those different components of it, where I think that the cool thing to see is that some of these emerging countries, they already have that leg up. Like they're already starting with that as the mentality of saying, what's the right modality for the simulation, the objectives. And I think that's really cool to see as well, is just kind of like how that changes based off of the places that have done simulation for a long time versus the places who are really emerging now and kind of coming out with that.
Yeah. Well, it kind of goes into the change theory. People don't like change.
Mm-hmm.
So if they have something that's already settled, unless there's a curriculum change or they're really looking at student evaluations or there's some sort of catalyst that is going to cause them to change, sometimes it's a little hard.
Yeah.
But I mean, again, for people like me who just were not willing to accept the status quo, we are definitely seeing a huge uptick. So that's great.
Yeah. And the other fun fact I thought was that Lance mentioned that his mom was working in simulation. And again, really identified that as kind of that like second generation simulationist kind of perspective of, again, he found it and was just like, this is so cool. I could do so much with this based off of his background. Same thing for me coming into it where it was like, oh, this is so cool. And kind of just like found their way into this world. And then now again, have stayed in this world really without even knowing that that's kind of the path or the perspective.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting that he had like a very, you know, great job. It sounded mm-hmm. to me like within Hollywood and mm-hmm. the film design and all of that other stuff, worked with people like Tom Hanks,
mm-hmm.
but was looking for something that was more fulfilling.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that he found his niche in simulation. And I think most of us
you know, we always joke about drinking the Kool-Aid, right? Of like, when is it that you transition from a educator that is doing simulation to a simulationist, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, an actor to a standardized patient.
Yeah.
But it is, my personal belief is where you really transition to where you see the potential with this educational modality and you're invested in its success, right?
Yeah.
And I think that really, for the same thing for Lance, is he was looking for something where he could help people and make a difference. And he was in the fire academy.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he was thinking was going to be his main outlet. And then he found simulation.
Yeah.
And it was like, game's over. I get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think he worked as sim ops, you know, at a sim center, and then was wanting to take what he had done as far as media and the film industry and taking it to that next level.
Yeah.
And I think he's helped this industry, simulation as a whole, mature hugely.
Yeah.
Because he's really a repository for this information, mm-hmm. saying, hey guys, this other stuff is out here. Hey guys, this person's doing some really cool things. Hey guys, have you seen a webinar on this? Mm-hmm. And it's really this open access, but at the same time, you know, he is supporting that broader knowledge base.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're in a community college, you don't have access to all of the journals or don't have time to read everything, you know, popping in a 30-minute webinar that he has on whatever it is. I know a lot of graduate students are, you know, listening to our podcast, but also going to his website to see webinars. So there's just he's really opened that door for so many people
and
made it more accessible.
I think too, just ahead of his time as well. Like, I think that typically industries like ours that are very niche in terms of like healthcare simulation, stuff like that, typically don't have someone leading that charge in terms of like, let's all come together, let's have a collaboration. And again, if you look at it, there really is no other site like HealthySim. There is no, you know, that is really it. Other than some very smaller offerings that don't have nearly the range. And I do think that, again, we're really lucky to be able to have someone pushing the boundaries.
Absolutely.
For that. And again, appreciate everything that Lance has done. Again, we love Lance. He really has always been a champion of ours and helped with a lot of different things. And I think that, again, just moving the industry forward. So we appreciate
it. A huge encourager.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you guys for listening to this episode of Simulation Nation. Leave your comments, which country you're listening from and any trends that you're seeing in your area of the world in the comments below. We'll see you next time.